There's an adventure in every cup waiting for you at Expedition Roasters. Expedition Roasters is the artisanal roaster of specialty Disney and pop culture themed coffees. So why not brew some magic at your home? Some of our coffees include Skipper's Brew, Ghoulish Delight, Enchanted Tiki Coconut, Redhead Rum, and many other unique roasts. Our coffees are certified gluten and allergen-free and feature unique custom artwork by guest artists. So start your adventure today by visiting us online at expeditionroasters.com. And Disney Nerds podcast listeners, be sure to take advantage of this exclusive offer and save 20% on your first purchase with code DISNERD20. Brew your happy place. That's expeditionroasters.com.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Wonderful world of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 273 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, how's it going? And welcome back to the show. I hope by that intro you figured out that we might be doing something a little bit wonderful world of Disney, and we are. What we're going to do tonight is a What Did Walt Say show. Basically, everybody always has the idea of what would Walt say about this or what would Walt say about that. Well, with the help of technology and such great recordings, we can actually hear what Walt said about different things. Tonight, the topic is going to be all about the World's Fair. I think that's going to be a really important topic in that a lot of the development for Walt Disney World and for Disneyland to keep on growing came from the work that was done at the World's Fair. You're going to hear tonight three different clips that I put together that shows what Walt thought about the World's Fair. Now, the first clip is going to be Disneyland Goes to the World's Fair, which was a Disneyland show, which was a Wonderful World of Disney show, or Wonderful World of Color show, depending on what decade you were watching it in, which has Walt basically talking all about the World's Fair and the four different attractions they were going to put into there that they worked on. The first was the Ford-sponsored exhibit, the Magic Skyway. And then there was the GE Carousel of Progress. And the state of Illinois helped sponsor the Abraham Lincoln exhibit. And then Pepsi also helped sponsor the It's a Small World, along with UNICEF. Now, unfortunately, what we won't hear is about how Walt went really, really strong after these companies for their sponsorships before the World's Fair began. Disneyland had already been open now about 10, 15 years, and he wanted to kind of go in a different direction with WED, or the Imagineers. They were their own company now, and to generate some profit or generate some income, I think they went after the World's Fair pretty strong and ended up having four exhibits. So now think of Walt Disney being the head of a company who created the exhibits for the companies who wanted to display them at the World's Fair. So I'm not sure if you would consider this entertainment as far as actually a as far as a utility or them providing a service where they would create these really cool, don't get me wrong, they're phenomenal, but they were basically just showcases. I mean, in the Skyway, they used Ford cars as the actual cars in the exhibit. Now, I think Walt at one point mentioned how all four of these were going to go in the parks. The Skyway never actually made it into a park. All the others did. Now, I got to tell you, though, looking at or listening to some of the ways he talked about the Skyway and the Ford ride, you hear about the dinosaurs and such and the way they fight. Well, that really does sound like the Universe of Energy, the old Ellen's Energy Adventure exhibit at Epcot. And I think kind of that's where that went. And if you ever have a chance to see the video of this audio, I'll put a link in the show notes. You'll be able to kind of see some of the vignettes that were in the Universe of Energy. Well, anyway, this show is about what Walt had to say, not what Ed had to say. So, without further ado, let's begin. What did Walt say about the World's Fair? Here we go.
From Walt Disney's wonderful World of Color, Disneyland goes to the World's Fair. Now your host, Walt Disney.
You know you're on television. You don't know about television, do you? I want you to look pretty. That's it. Yeah, get your head up and hold it there now. Show them how you behave. That's a good one. How would you like to have one of these little dinosaurs for a pet? Actually, they're tame as a kitten, quite friendly. And they won't bite the hand that feeds them because they're strictly vegetarians. You know, scientists call these little creatures brontosauruses. But we have named them Huey. Thank you, Huey. And Dewey. Now, Dewey, don't get bashful on me now. Come on up. Get it up there. That's it. That's it. Thank you. And Louie. Hey, Louie. Hey, boy. Huh? Actually, baby dinosaurs would make great house pets. Of course, you'd have to have a very large house because a creature like this would grow to be 90 feet long and 30 feet tall and weigh up to 60,000 pounds. Now, I suppose you're wondering what we're doing with dinosaurs here at the studio. Well, these baby brontosauruses are just a few of the hundreds of three-dimensional animated figures developed for the World's Fair. Although fairs are supposed to feature the newest thing, we went back over 100 million years for these models. In a few minutes, we're going to take you backstage and show you how we created four special exhibits for the New York World's Fair, the greatest show on Earth, next to Disneyland. This is what we call our Imagineering Department. It's where we dream up our new projects for Disneyland or World's Fair. You might be wondering how an animation studio like ours got into the World's Fair business. And frankly, I've often wondered about that myself. But we've been preparing for this international exposition for many years without realizing it. Little did we know when we dreamed up Mickey and Donald here that someday they would be the ancestors of the mammoth animated characters we've created for this fair, such as this Tyrannosaurus Rex here, the carnivorous lizard of prehistoric times. Our work with three-dimensional characters started when we needed a giant squid for our feature picture, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Now, the script called for a lifelike monster big enough to destroy a submarine. And obviously, you can't hire an actor like that through central casting. So we had to create our own two-ton squid. We needed a cast of lifelike figures for our most ambitious project, Disneyland. We found ourselves in this new field of animation in a big way. When Disneyland opened, our new three-dimensional stars were in hand to greet the public. As Adventureland grew, new inhabitants were added to the jungles, like our elephant pool here. And Frontierland increased in population also, with bears and fighting elks. Later, new rides were added, like our monorail and our submarine, for Disneyland will never be completed. The building of Disneyland gave us a new art and a new type of artist. One that works with a slide rule and a blowtorch instead of pencil and brush. These fellows are building a Tyrannosaurus Rex, weighing over 20,000 pounds. He'll be the heavy in our show Magic Skyway, a drama of prehistoric days. You'll see him later tangling with the Stegosaurus in a fight to the finish. Dinosaurs are called Triceratops, or three-horned face. That woolly mammoth will look a lot better after he's given a coat of hair. These are full-grown brontosauruses. Now you can see why they wouldn't make good house pets. After completion, our monsters are led over to stage two for finishing touches. Our prehistoric show also includes the story of early man who appeared on Earth 100 million years after dinosaurs became extinct. Studio hairstylists and makeup men give the cast the same care they'd give a movie star. This Stone Age star rates the special attention of Pat McNally, head of our makeup department. The one on the left is Pat. Nobody loafs around this studio. As soon as they're completed, they're put to work. Looks with his hair. Each of the thousands of nylon hairs had to be attached by hand. Here's the first Boy Scout building the first fire, the hard way. And here they're putting fire to good use while Mama barbecues a leg of mammoth. The pterodactyl was nature's first attempt to create birds, but they were only gliders. Artist sketches are used as a guide for the finished figures. You know, a brontosaurus has to eat a lot to feed his 60,000-pound body, so we'd better check this fellow out fast. There's a happy family. It's hard to believe that these 2-ton triceratops were hatched from eggs. But dinosaurs were not mammals. They were egg-laying reptiles. Checkout, each group is arranged exactly as it will appear at the fair. Tyrannosaurus Rex, the monster on the right, was a meat eater and the prehistoric king of beasts. His victim, the Stegosaurus, has only his spiked tail to defend himself. This tableau tells of man's struggle for survival. The woolly mammoth is the only one of our prehistoric monsters that survived until the time of man. You see, man had one great advantage. He learned to use his brain to invent weapons and is thrown here to apply leverage. It was probably at a crucial time like this that man invented speech, starting with, "Hey, look behind you." Man used primitive drawings to record ideas. The first form of writing, you might say. Now here's a fellow we've all been wanting to meet. The inventor of the wheel. He's making quite a pitch to sell his new idea. Let's listen.
Pito, go avagnia a nan a pito a dido ana de iwe iwe.
Some were quite impressed.
Am idu papa ama uv iwe. Go, go.
But others couldn't care less.
Man, go.
And go they did. As soon as they passed final inspection, our prehistoric cast was loaded into our fleet of trucks, and we're off to the fair. Of course, a few had to wait for the next load. They say a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, but this little fellow here is worth a fortune, because we poured a fortune into creating him. Now, the first problem was to make a move. Come on, presto, move. That's it. Come on, show off. Rear back and show off your chest. That's it. The crowd. It cost a heck of a lot of money, so you should live up to it. Well, actually, it wasn't as simple as that. Just as we had to learn to make our animated cartoons talk, we had to find a way to make these characters talk, too. Now, to accomplish this, we created a new type of animation. So new that we had to invent a new name for it.
Audio animatronics?
Right, audio animatronics. Audio for sound.
See, and electronically animated by sound. That's what he's trying to say.
Thank you, that's what I'm trying to say.
Excuse me, Walt.
It's okay. How about it, can you sing?
Can I sing? Memories. No. You should see my dance, it is even worse.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, as I was saying, work in this new type of animation is going on around the clock to meet the opening date of the fair. For years, birds have given up their feathers to decorate the ladies, but here we're reversing the procedure. Incidentally, everything about these birds is synthetic, including their feathers. These youngsters will appear in our show, It's a Small World. They are just a few of the 700 stars of the exhibit for the United States Committee for UNICEF. The Disneyland Wardrobe Department did all the costuming of these figures. We had to give every moving part special fatigue tests. The tremendous task of putting these exhibits together was not done by the studio alone. Other companies have done design and manufacturing work and have licensed the use of rights and inventions that they have developed. This has made it possible to create these exhibits for the benefit of all of us at the World's Fair. Ever since I was a small boy in Illinois, I've had a great personal admiration for Abraham Lincoln. So when we decided to recreate some of the great moments in Mr. Lincoln's life for the World's Fair, we directed all our energies to that task. We wanted to bring to the people of today the inspiring words of the man who held this nation together during its moment of greatest crisis, the Civil War. Now, to recreate a truly lifelike image of Lincoln, we use our new medium of audio animatronics. To start with, we were fortunate in being able to secure this life mask of the 16th president. How did we get this, Blaine?
This is actually a copy of an original life mask by the sculptor Leonard Volk in Chicago in 1860.
Before Lincoln was president.
Before Lincoln was president.
Before he had a beard.
That's right.
Now with this to start with, our sculptor, Blaine Gibson, has been able to create this very accurate likeness of this great man. During our exhaustive research into Lincoln's life, we studied his mannerisms, his gestures, and even his voice characteristics to create a faithful likeness of this honored man. The final result is so lifelike that you might find it hard to believe. So when you visit the fair, be sure and stop by the State of Illinois Pavilion and spend a few moments with this great man. Now, another of our World Fair exhibits that features the audio animatronics is the Carousel Theater of Progress. Well, how do you do? This is the Carousel Theater of Progress. In Act One, the audience meets an audio animatronic family. The time is just before the turn of the century. Father, the host, tells the joys of living in the pre-electric era. Next, our audience moves to Act Two and the 1920s. Now the family has all kinds of new contraptions to make life more enjoyable, including a crystal radio. Then our audience moves to the fabulous 40s, the beginning of the electronic era and the age of television. The last act of the Carousel Theater shows the wonderful family life of today with its leisurely push-button living. Now let's go over to the full-scale set.
Fellas, will you clear the set? We want to have a little dry run. Girls, can you let that go for a while? We just want a little dry run on this thing. Okay, Wavell, you ready?
This is the stage for Act One of the Carousel Theater Progress. Stages for the other acts are being assembled at other places in the studio for a complete audio animatronic dress rehearsal. Now, this contraption here might look like something from outer space, but it's actually a control harness for programming the actions and gestures of our audio animatronic figures. Shall we show them how it works?
Really won't.
This is the Carousel Theater host. Whatever the man in the harness does, this figure will respond simultaneously in the same manner. Would you care for a light? I don't think we better. A little smoking on the stage. He can, read the newspaper. How about showing how you read the newspaper? What's the date of that thing? 1890. The operator of the control harness has to be a bit of a ham actor, as you can see. Now, you know, all of the operator's actions are recorded on tape, and separate tapes are made for each of our figures. And it takes lots of rehearsal and refinement to get the gestures to be lifelike. Adding dialogue is a separate operation. For this, the operator synchronizes his lip movements with a pre-recorded dialogue track. In this way, we make the figures talk. This electronically controlled method of programming can give us a wide range of movements. A broad gesture, two, the wink of an eye. That's it. Thank you. Now, for a better understanding of the Carousel Theater, let's go over to the brain of the audio animatronic figures. These machines are what make the audio animatronic figures move and talk. The actions, including facial expressions from the lifting of an eyebrow to a smile and the dialogue, are programmed on tape. Ready for a demonstration, Herb? Now, when this first machine finishes with its phase, as it is going to do pretty soon, it'll trigger this other machine, which programs the next phase of the show. Now, while this is happening, the first machine will rewind itself to its starting point. Yet during this interchange, we don't lose so much as the wink of an eye. There. Now let's hear the theme song of the Carousel Theater.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Dream, and that's the start. He follows his dream with mind and heart.
When it becomes a reality,
it's a dream come true for you and me.
So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.
Get them spinning. Hope we have some good winds back there in New York.
This little mobile is a scale model of our Tower of the Four Winds that stands at the entrance to the UNICEF Pavilion at the World's Fair.
And the real tower is, how tall is the real tower, Roman?
It's 120 feet.
120 feet. And it can be seen from all over the fairgrounds, we hope. So when you visit the fair, ask your friends to meet you under the Tower of the Four Winds at our pavilion here. Incidentally, if you're looking for our good friend and sponsor, Eastman Kodak, they're right next door to our UNICEF exhibit. And if you can't find UNICEF, remember, it's right next door to Eastman Kodak. Now, the tower's colorful figures represent animals from all over the world, I think. Don't they?
That's right.
What animals?
Oh, there's a camel and a llama and...
Where's the camel?
The camel's the little green ball on the carousel.
That's the camel? You know, like all our other exhibits, we checked the real tower out carefully before shipping it to New York. Our exhibit called It's a Small World is a salute to the United Nations Children's Fund, a worldwide organization that is working for a better tomorrow by helping the children of today. Our musical fantasy features the songs and dances of youngsters from more than 100 nations, each singing in his own native language. Now, when the current World's Fair ends, all four of our shows, The Magic Skyway, The Carousel Theater, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, and It's a Small World, will find a permanent home at Disneyland, USA. But right now, they're all being featured at the World's Fair. And since many of you haven't attended the fair yet, we're going to take you there on the magic carpet of color television. And while there, we'll visit the young stars of our Disneyland-type ride in It's a Small World. Well, here we are at the Court of Nations, and our goodwill ambassadors from Disneyland are on hand to greet us. One of the novel features at the fair is RCA's service for finding lost children. A lost youngster is brought to the RCA studio where his picture is televised over a closed circuit to the many TV monitors throughout the fairgrounds. Uh-oh, Dopey's lost again. I'm not surprised, it happens about a half a dozen times a day. Dopey's a real ham about appearing on television. The Kodak Pavilion is the picture-taking center at the fair. And I see that our ambassadors from Disneyland are as popular here as they are at home. Right next door is the Tower of the Four Winds. And as you can see, our friends are using it as a meeting place. Now it's time to join the passengers on a musical cruise to visit the children of It's a Small World. Bon voyage. For our finale, children of every nation join in singing our theme, It's a Small World.
Nothing ever conceived by man has done more to give him a concise understanding and encyclopedic picture of his achievements and projection of his future than the International World's Fair. His exhibits are the substance of his imagination, his dream of today, the reality of tomorrow. When the first visitors surge through the gates of the New York World's Fair on April 22nd this year, they will come face to face with the most awe-inspiring extravaganza ever conceived. This billion-dollar spectacle will be more dazzling, more educational, more fun, more astonishing than any World's Fair ever held. This is Dick Strout with World's Fair Report. We'll talk with a gentleman whose contribution to the fair is very much in evidence. His dominant role was inevitable, for he is a master showman, the man who created the world's largest tourist attraction, in itself a world's fair, Disneyland. Of course, that man is Mr. Walt Disney. It's a real pleasure, sir, to talk with you.
Well, nice to talk to you, Dick.
Under the banner of WED Enterprises, which incidentally stands for Walter Elias Disney, Mr. Disney has produced four major exhibits at the fair for Ford Motor Company, General Electric, and the state of Illinois. WED also designed a fourth exhibit, Pepsi-Cola, which was constructed and will be operated by Walt Disney Productions. What is WED Enterprises, Mr. Disney? Is this the same group of talented people that designed Disneyland?
Well, WED is, you might call it my backyard laboratory, you know, my workshop away from work. It served a purpose in that some of the things I was planning, like Disneyland, for example, it was pretty hard for the banking mind to go with it. I had to go ahead on my own and develop it to a point where that they could begin to comprehend what I had in mind. So it's been true with a lot of things in our history here that we've been doing something that's a little bit out of the run of things, and it's pretty hard to sell people on what you have in your mind. So you have to go ahead and develop it. And that's what I've been doing with WED. I can do things at WED without asking anybody, even my wife. She's hard to sell out of time.
Like space age development, many of your contributions have introduced new words to our vocabulary. Your most recent is audio animatronic. I hope I'm pronouncing
that right. It's, sound, animation through electronics. It's opened a whole new door for us. We can program whole shows on a tape. This little tape sends signals, and the little figures go to work, and they sing and act and move according to the impulse that comes from the tape. And this has all been possible because of this big drive that we've had on the space age development, the electronic age.
You're using audio animatronics for all four exhibits, like we mentioned before. What are some of the specific effects of each exhibit? How would you like each one to affect fair visitors?
They all tie in with the theme of the World's Fair. It's progress. Like the General Electric show, for example, we have what we call the Carousel of Progress. Now, it's a theater that revolves. The people revolve around six stages. And on each one of these stages are my audio animatronic figures that enact a little part of the whole story. And we start with the pre-electrical age. We had coal lamps and all that, coal lamps. And we go up to early electrical, mid-electric, and then up to today and what you can do with electricity in your home. But the audience itself revolves around these fixed stages. And it's called the Carousel Theater of Progress. And I want to tell you about my Pepsi-Cola show. This took a lot of imagineering, too. It's a tribute to the children of the world. And it's a little fantasy where you take a trip around the world of children in a boat. And you visit all the different countries with all the different children of these countries in their costumes. And then a lot of toy-like figures to represent other things. And these little figures dance and sing and finally end up with a big finale, which is like the finale in any musical, where all the children from these other lands that you visited are all together in one, all singing in unison, and it's a big, spectacular finish. It's a small world. With the Ford exhibit, we take them in a Ford product, and they ride back in time. And they go back to the primeval days with the big giant lizards, dinosaurs and brontosauruses and stegosauruses and all of that. And they're all animated and moving, very lifelike. They move from that up to the early age of man. Then we show how man was learning to better his way of life, where he learned how to use fire, where he learned to build weapons. And you'll meet for the first time the fellow who invented the wheel. He's a caveman. He's got this wheel, and he's trying to sell it to his neighbors, and he's having an awful hard time. You know, they don't believe the darn thing's worth anything, you know. Then we go into the fantasy of the world of tomorrow. In the Ford product, you ride right through, more or less like a skyway. And then we come back to today, and the Ford has a wonderful show of their product today and how it's designed and all of that. I think the Ford exhibit's going to be one of the top exhibits at the fair.
And then let's see, there's one other.
Oh, my Lincoln? I think that people are going to be surprised how lifelike this Abraham Lincoln is going to be when they're going to sit in there and listen to this great man who gives a speech on liberty. And these are the speeches taken from Abraham Lincoln's own writings and speeches. And he's in a very dignified setting, and the audience is conditioned. And then they're presented to the president, and he stands up and addresses this audience. Well, by the way, on the Lincoln figure, we've done considerable research so that we really could create a lifelike impression of Lincoln. We're fortunate in being able to secure a life mask that was made of Lincoln. It was made in about 1860, I think. And it gave us a chance to know the contour of his face and all of that. And then by research, we found all of his mannerisms. We selected a voice that fit the closest to what was described as Lincoln's voice, and also how he used to start his speech. He'd start it rather high, then as he got into his speech, he would come down and modulate his voice a little more carefully. He was a fellow who could get rather emotional in the middle of a speech, too. So we've done everything we can to create the most lifelike image of Lincoln, more so than I think any actor could ever do. It's a big fair. I think people are going to be surprised. It's really an exciting thing. I was there just a few weeks ago. It's going to be the biggest fair, I think, yet, without a doubt.
The New York World's Fair sounds like an experience of a lifetime, and I'm sure that no one who goes there is likely to forget it. Thank you so much, Walt Disney, for being our guest.
Thank you, Dick.
This is Dick Strout with World's Fair Report, returning you to our main studios.
We're going to do some attractions here at this thing called the World's Fair. Were you familiar with World's Fairs? Did you have an understanding of what all that really meant?
Oh, I knew what they were because Walt sent a group of some of the Imagineers to the Brussels World's Fair in 58.
Oh, okay.
And that big SC, you know, he was in planning for ultimately the 64-65 fair. So he sent us to the Seattle World's Fair, and that was a year after I had already started working on the Ford Motor Company Skyway ride.
62, right?
Yeah, 62 of that fair. So that was my first personal experience to see what a fair was like. So we saw the magnitude of what it was going to be, and obviously different pavilions sponsored by different people. But at that time, we didn't understand all of the projects we were going to do for the New York World's Fair.
Which was the first project of the World's Fair attractions? Was the one that you all started working on? Or were they all sort of at the same time?
Almost at the same time, the carousel and Ford.
Okay.
Yeah, well, Ford, July 8th, 1961, was the day that Walt launched me into that with my boss, Roger Brogie. And about two or three days later, we flew to Dearborn to talk to the Ford Motor Company, just as we were getting started on the details.
Yeah, I started on the Ford Pavilion in January of 61. Earlier because John Hinch and I were assigned to go back and go on a tour that Ford set up because they wanted us to have a background about what the company was like and therefore to know kind of their what they wanted to communicate to the public. And that's how we started developing the story. You know, we always start with story first. And that was January 61.
So that's it for show number 273 of What Did Walt Say? World's Fair Edition. I hope you guys listened to that and heard one or two things that might have stood out for you. It kind of gives you a framework of where Walt was at this point of his life. He's been through so many incarnations from the very beginning of the career to the very end that I think it's sometimes important to kind of take a step back and target one part of his life and kind of just, you know, zero in and see what he was doing or what he was thinking about at the time. And at this point, you can hear that Walt was the total showman, still trying to sell the product. Okay, guys, well, tell me what you think. Let me know what you think of these type of shows. Do you want me to keep doing more of these or not? I really do like doing them, so I hope you kind of answer positively for this. Hey, Jimmy, how do our friends get in touch with the show?
You can email us at questions@thedisneynerdspodcast.com and email us individually at ed@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, jimmy@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, etc. You can send us a message on Facebook to the page, The Disney Nerds Podcast. Join our group, Disney Nerds, Instagram @thedisneynerdspodcast and Twitter @thedisneynerds. Make sure to check out the website, www.thedisneynerdspodcast.com. And watch the live stream every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Walt Disney World time.
That's it for show number 273. Thanks for listening, guys. Without you out there, this wouldn't be worth the while. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. If you would like to join-
Like your